You're listening to a Prairie Punk House Companion right here on the Prairie Punk Press Network.
The views expressed by any host or any guest on the Prairie Punk House Companion are the personal views or opinions of the people who express them and do not reflect the views or opinions of anyone else on the show or any company, employer, or any other organization that the individual expressing them has or will affiliate with in the past, present, or future. Hi, everyone, and welcome to a Prairie Punk House Companion. We're on episode 8, and my name is Neckbone.
Hi, I'm Jerbear, and apparently, if the Misfits tried to be a band now, they couldn't because of cancel culture, according to Glyn Danzig.
Oh, wow.
And because the edgiest thing that the Misfits ever did was write songs about shitty horror movies.
Yeah, for sure. Also, I don't think they could be a band today because they'd be sued by the Misfits, who've been around for several decades. So that might actually put a stop to any band trying to start themselves today, as the Misfits do. So I guess they're right.
His band, the Misfits.
What's that?
I think he meant his band, the Misfits, wouldn't be able to exist today because of cancel culture.
What about Danzig? Would his band Danzig be allowed? Would they be able to make Mother?
No, people hate moms. Moms are canceled just in time for Mother's Day.
You know? Yeah, that was like 3 weeks ago at this point. But that's okay. We're on the internet. Time has no fucking meaning.
He's such a little dipshit.
He really is.
And when I say little, I mean little.
Yeah.
He is a little guy.
Right. And
that's why he's so angry.
And not just in stature, because some of us are also not very big in stature. He is just a little man. Just mm-hmm. in personality and in every other, because I've definitely I met John Stewart a few years ago.
He's a little guy too.
He is not a tall man. I'm not a tall man, but I am taller than John Stewart. John Stewart, though, did not give off that little man energy that Glyn Danzig does.
The other cool thing that happened today was Ireland, Spain, and Norway recognized Palestine as a state.
Oh, nice.
So that's something.
I mean,
and Israel removed their ambassadors.
Oh, okay. To Spain, Ireland, and Norway. Two of those countries are members of the European Union, so that's not nothing.
Speaking of anti-fascist mm-hmm. or anti-fascism, I heard from a friend the other day that I mentioned a couple episodes ago about how I'm an elected official. Mm-hmm. So the last time I was running for election, I guess she heard somebody refer to me as walking Antifa.
that's a badge of honor.
I have an Iron Front tattoo, so.
Nice. Did they mean not that as a compliment, or were they trying to insult you?
I would guess it was meant as an insult.
Oh, okay.
It was during COVID and school lockdowns and things, like lots of people were really angry mm-hmm. and it's also, you know, George Floyd protests and stuff, so mm-hmm. it's definitely an interesting time to run for office in a relatively majority conservative suburb.
yeah for sure. Overall majority conservative state, almost top to bottom with few exceptions.
Yeah. Wichita not really being one of them.
Yeah, Wichita's is it split about down the middle?
Yeah, I would say it's probably a purple area in mm-hmm. Kansas, whereas, you know, Lawrence is blue.
Yeah,
for sure.
Wyandotte's blue.
Yeah, surprisingly, Johnson County, one of the richest counties in the country, mm-hmm. is not blue.
Not blue, very red. I think Topeka's purple now, or Shawnee County in general is.
I was also talking with a person for whom I volunteer with some of my activism that I do. And we were at lunch, and so one of the high school that I graduated from mm-hmm. had graduation on Friday, and the cops had to come because there were like four fights in the parking lot.
What were the fights about?
The graduation was being held. Oh, I don't know.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if there was like some political motivation or just regular fights.
So we were talking a little about that, and he was talking about how his graduating class had 80 people in it. And I told him about the neo-Nazis in Wichita and having to carry around like a smiley and shit like that for protection. And then I told him about you getting stabbed in the neck by a crackhead in Kansas City. And he was just like, I have a feeling that we have led very different lives. Yeah, probably. He's from a town of like 500. Mm-hmm. We left off with you getting attacked and moving out of the Boston apartments.
Oh, yeah. So I moved in with Leahy down. He lived just off the plaza.
Don't tell me about like 47th and Jarbo?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the street name?
Or actually, yeah, he was closer to State Line than UMKC. Yeah, he was. We were like a few blocks from Kansas, basically. But we could walk to the plaza. And we could walk to Westport pretty quickly, too.
The west side of Westport.
There was a good video store there. Not the one I worked for. It's a different one. It was way better than the one I worked for. And then later, Record Bar was over there later. But oh, there was a Hollywood video. But there was an independent store, too. Like,
yeah, no, I knew that. I was just also trying to think of what else was there. I couldn't remember if it was Hollywood or Blockbuster.
Yeah, there was a Hollywood. There was a Blockbuster. I think the Blockbuster was over on the Kansas side, though. But it wasn't too far. Yeah. But, yeah, so I moved in with Leahy. I don't remember where I was working at that time. I just draw a lot of job blanks from right before I moved to St. Louis. I mean, it was just like in my head, it was just a mix of me working at Houston's, working at Godfather. I worked at Godfather's Pizza in Mission, Kansas for a while. And then I worked at a Godfather's Pizza in Kansas City, Kansas, too. I was just jumping all around to different crappy pizzerias. But yeah, I don't remember specifically like where I think I had a different job probably every month that I lived with him.
How did you fucking do your taxes back then, man?
No, my mom worked in numbers for her entire career. So I'm not kidding. I would just mail her my W-2s and she would do my taxes for me. Yeah.
My mom did my taxes too.
Yeah, because
So I kept my mom's address as my permanent address, and I worked in Missouri, so I would just send my tax stuff to her, and she would figure it out. I don't know. I didn't do my own taxes until I got married. The whole time I was a bartender, I didn't make enough on paper to even pay taxes, so I just didn't even bother.
Nice.
Because I think I made, on paper, I made like, maybe $10,000 a year.
Oh, Jesus.
When you moved in with Leahy, we still kicked it all the time. I know we came over, we usually came over to Leahy's on Tuesdays to watch Buffy and Angel.
Yep.
And that was usually when I saw you. And then you would come over to the Central House some while they were still there. But everything back then is so fuzzy because
I know.
I mean, I was drunk every night and I was very drunk every night.
Mm-hmm.
So it all bleeds together. I don't have any like stable, like vivid memories from then really.
Yeah. Same.
So, I don't know. What was it like at Leahy's?
I mean, it was super chill.
I mean, it was safer.
yeah, definitely. It wasn't as much of a party place either. Like, I mean, we just kind of worked. I mean, he worked a lot. And then, you know, it was just kind of chill. I'd go to parties, go to the Central House, and then you guys would come over. Like, you'd come over and other people would come over to our place and just drank and like watched Buffy or drank and walked around the plaza being drunk.
Watched a lot of movies too.
Watched what?
We watched a lot of movies over there too.
Yeah, we did. That was like a weird phase where like we weren't going out as much. Like we, before that, we'd gone out like or gone somewhere, whether it was to the Central House or to a bar or something or to a show. We were going out like almost every night, and then we just kind of transitioned to just watching movies and hanging out. I don't know if it's because we had less money or if we were just tired of going out all the time, but yeah, I just remember we would just watch a fuck ton of movies and just get drunk.
I remember New Year's Eve at the Central House, and they had a party, and I stashed my liquor in Russ's room, and then he locked his room and left. And this was Y2K, so everybody, not everybody, some people were like really scared that the world was going to end or whatever. We all thought they were idiots. But I was so fucking pissed off that night because I didn't have my bottle of rum because Russ left and locked it in his room. And I was like, this is how bad of a drunk I was. I was contemplating like trying to get the door off the hinges so I could get in there and find my rum. Jeez. I'm sure I was already drunk from beer or whatever, but like I was so pissed. So they were still there on New Year's Eve. It would have been pretty shortly after that that they moved in.
Everybody moved into
moved to Boston. From Central House to Boston Apartments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember that
because I
started coming over again. I started coming over pretty for considering I like wanted to move out of there. I came over pretty frequently after that. I remember being over there all the time. I was either at their apartment or your apartment. And that's what we were talking about earlier when I remember Andrew like just had like a blanket and a pillow underneath your dining room table. And that's when I checked on him and I was like, "You doing okay?" He's just listening to Flaming Lips and like, yeah, just like freaking out. And I was like, "All right, you know, let me know if you need anything."
Yeah, it was probably around February or March. I let him stay with me because it's backstory. We haven't mentioned Andrew before, I don't think, but he was our buddy. Homeless punk rocker. We met him on the island panhandling, and he wound up coming back. This is when you still lived in Boston Apartments with me. He wound up coming over. He brought like a handle of vodka and was volatile in not like a toxic way, but you just didn't know what his mood was going to be or how he was going to react. And when we first met him, it was really intimidating. Like I thought like he might just suddenly get pissed and kick my ass.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that was just first meeting him, and he was very wasted and you know, intimidating. And once we got to know him, you know, he's a big teddy bear and he was like the biggest sweetheart. And yeah, he would get fucking loaded and would play just perfectly play a Steely Dan song on my bass, like without missing a note. Just a phenomenal bass player. But he was so out of his head that he couldn't fucking do anything with it. And he was homeless, and he got really sick and went to the doctor, and the doctor was like, "Yo, you're killing yourself with alcohol and drug abuse, or you're gonna fucking die." And he was telling us about it, and I was like, "Dude, you don't have to sleep on the streets. You can come over here." I was like, "Just don't fucking do heroin here, and it's fine, you know, come over here, but no junk. Drink if you want to, who fucking cares about that?" But yeah, he lived with me on and off the rest of the time that I was at Boston Apartments. And one morning I woke up to get ready for work. It was a Saturday, and he started having a seizure, and I didn't know what the fuck to do. So I called an ambulance, and I was really pissed off at the time because they were like, "What did he do? What drugs did he do? What's he on?" And I was like, "Dude, he's fucking nothing. He's just sick." Like, but like, I get why they're asking, because they have to know, because that'll affect how they treat him or whatever. But like,
yeah.
At the time, I was really irritated. I was just fucking help my friend, man. Mm. Jesus Christ. That was pretty scary. Yeah, so he went back and forth between my apartment and Eric's apartment downstairs. And then before I moved into Leahy's, because I moved into Leahy's after you moved out.
But yeah, I moved in with roommate that I eventually moved to St. Louis with. Yeah.
So Andrew was like, "Hey, I'm gonna go to San Francisco and die." And he loved my leather jacket that I had spikes all over, and I had I think I had the Dirt logo painted on the back, shit like that. And I gave that to him because he wanted to go to San Francisco and die by the ocean. I was like, "Here, take my jacket with you. You'll get more use out of it than I will." And he left for San Francisco, and he was gone the whole time I lived in Lawrence. And then came back for a little bit, I think. And then when I moved to Wichita, he finally tried to get sober at his aunt's house. He basically locked himself in his aunt's room and to get sober. And without realizing that alcohol withdrawal will fucking kill you if you don't have medication to help you through withdrawals, and his body went into shock. Mm-hmm. And he died from alcohol withdrawals. Really fucking sucks.
Yeah. October 2002, right?
It's October or November, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. I was working at a record store when Andy IY called me to tell me that he had passed away.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. I remember 2002 really well. That was the same year that Nathan Gilson died, too. I don't
know if you remember that. Nathan Gilson died December 16th or 18th, I believe. He had an aneurysm.
Yep.
And December 99, fucking Stewie died.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in Kansas City. I had the day off on the day of his funeral, but nobody let me know he fucking died until the day after. Justin called me, and he was like, "Hey, I just got back from Stewie's funeral. Wanted to, you know, I think he asked, you know, if I knew or why I hadn't been there." And I got so upset because I was like, the last thing I told people in Wichita before I left was, "Let me know when Stewie dies," because he had a heart condition, and we all knew that he was kind of not long for this world.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody was kind of prepared and knew what was up. And so I was like, you know, when it happens, be sure and let me know. And I mean, I understand people are grieving and whatever. It's not anybody's fault that it happened, but man, I was fucking pissed.
Yeah. That, around that time, a lot of people died. My friend from a previous podcast I mentioned, who wore the chainmail to Central House, died that same year too. My friend Amanda, who I'd become good friends with, I worked with her at Little Caesars. She was, I don't know if she was punk adjacent, but like, I was like, oh man, I bet she was kind of into like goth and metal music, but I was like, hey, that's where I started too, so maybe I could like get her into punk rock if I like give her the right CDs. But yeah, she was murdered by her boyfriend, and they found her in the trunk of his car.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And he had, I mean, this is all Googleable. But yeah, he had gotten angry that she was no longer wanting to date him. And I think she'd start dating someone else. Because I'd met her boyfriend, because he came by Little Caesars sometimes, and it was not the guy that killed her. It was her ex-boyfriend that killed her. And the guy I'd met, because I thought it was him, and I'd met him, and I was like, dude, that dude seemed super nice, and I was really shocked and pissed off. But I found out that it was actually her ex that killed her because he was angry that she was dating somebody. He was jealous, I guess.
Jesus.
That she was dating somebody else. And I went to her funeral, and I found out at her funeral that she was a mutual friend with Lil Johnny. Because I ran into him at her funeral. And I was like, holy shit. We both were friends with the same person and had no idea. But yeah, that was a bad year. Lots of people died that year.
Well, our neighbor, well, this is when I still lived in Kansas City. I had moved out of Boston Apartments at this time, but our neighbor on the bottom floor, him and his wife, and she was pregnant, had walked to Sunfresh to get groceries, and on the way out, somebody mugged them, and you know, he was like, give me your wallet, and as he reached back in his back pocket to get his wallet, the dude shot him because he was afraid he was reaching for a gun, fucking killed him.
Yeah, that's right, that was 2000.
Because I was living with Leahy. It's just I had like freshly moved in with Leahy, and the Central House kids told me about it because they all knew each other.
Yeah,
I knew them a little bit. I wouldn't say I was friends with them, but you know, we lived in the same building, saw each other around. You know, I think they were also like older punk kids at the time. They were a little older than us. I'm starting a family and shit, you know.
Yeah, so yeah. They were probably like in their late 20s or maybe early 30s. Yeah, they were, if I remember right.
Pushing 30s. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and she was like 7 or 8 months pregnant.
Yeah.
And her husband got shot in the neck and killed. So what other crimes happened then? Eric got jumped right outside the Boston Apartments, and Jim jumped from their second floor onto the entryway of Boston Apartments and then down onto the sidewalk and beat the shit out of whoever that was. Somebody else got jumped there too, like 2 weeks later. Maybe it was Ken.
That whole area was fucked up, and I don't remember why I moved in with my next roommate. I moved out of Leahy's. I moved in with my next roommate, who I'd met at community colleges in Kansas City, Missouri, the Metropolitan Community Colleges. We were both taking classes at Penn Valley. And I met her in a class, and we decided to move in together. There was nothing romantic about it. In fact, she was a lesbian. So it was a weird, like, we had a weird connection that was not romantic. And we decided, for whatever reason, I think initially I wanted to move to Brooklyn, New York, desperately. Brooklyn was up and coming at that time. It was before all the hipsters had completely taken over. So it was still pretty cheap to live there. It was still like, I mean,
cheap for New York prices. It was still like $1,000 a month for a studio.
The apartment we looked at was $800 for a 2-bedroom.
Oh.
Yeah.
Damn.
This is Brooklyn. You're talking about Manhattan.
No, I was thinking probably a year or two later when people from Lawrence started moving out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Brooklyn became expensive. Brooklyn is now like as expensive, almost as expensive as Manhattan. At the time, Brooklyn, especially when the further out you go into Brooklyn, it got super cheap. So my roommate and I, we decided that we were going to take a road trip to New York. A girl that she had just started dating wanted to tag along. I recommended that maybe she not tag along. So my roommate was the type of person who, she was not very committal romantically to people. And this girl, I think, thought this was going to be a bigger thing than my roommate thought it was going to be. And that became apparent on the trip. And all I can say is I warned her.
Uncomfortable.
it became very uncomfortable for me, who was the third wheel. We drove my Mercury Topaz had a failing starter to Brooklyn. So I'm pretty sure that, I got the car to turn on in Kansas City, and I don't think I turned it off till we got to Brooklyn, which means we gassed up with the car on, which you're not supposed to do. You're not supposed to do that shit. But yeah, so I was like, fuck, if I turn it off, I might not be able to turn it back on. And I don't want
to
get stuck.
You need a hammer to tap on the starter, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I had to do that with one of my cars.
But
my dad's starter, so I had to crawl under it every time and tap on the starter.
And I don't think we stayed the night in here. I think we drove straight through. I think we just took turns driving.
You love to drive straight through places.
I do. God, I did that shit all the time, man. I drove San Diego to Wichita without stopping by myself. That was 24, 25 hours of nonstop driving, except to get gas and
you said you were
coffee and shit.
By the time you got,
I was absolutely
hallucinating by the time you got to Aaron's house.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was hallucinating. I started hallucinating in the Texas and Oklahoma panhandle area. And then I drove through the entire state of Kansas like that after the panhandles. Not recommended.
There's nothing there. It's Western Kansas is completely flat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing to look at except your hallucinations, I guess.
The drive to New York wasn't as bad. Well, I had two other people in the car with me who also took turns driving. So I could nap and stuff and relax. And, so we stayed in, we got a hostel in Brooklyn and we managed to find our way there. We got there pretty late at night and it was in a really sketchy part of Brooklyn. For the New Yorker who listens to this podcast, there's got to be at least one of you. There's millions of you fuckers out there. So at least one of you must listen to this podcast. We're off the letter L train. I have to mention it's the letter L because if you just say the L train, then Chicagoans think you're talking about the L system. So no, right. The letter L train in Brooklyn, and it was super, super sketchy. And they're like rat. This is the first time I saw rats that were as big as cats. And we got off the train, found the hostel, and we were in New York for a week, maybe 2 weeks. We were there for a long time. And I was trying like hell to convince my roommate. I was like, we need to move to Brooklyn. We need to move to New York. This is where we need to be. And we even looked at an apartment we were pretty far out. I think we were near Coney Island or maybe even further out than Coney Island. We were near the end of where the subway stops, where the subway is elevated and stops. So that far out. And yeah, it was like a 2-bedroom for like $800 a month, which I thought was highway robbery at the time. I think if I found a
our apartment was fucking $350 for the two of us.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I was like, yeah, I think we need to move out here. And she was like, she said, I'll move. She was like, I'm ready to leave Kansas City, but I think New York is too far. What if we moved somewhere closer to Kansas City? And somehow, some way, I don't remember how we ended up coming to this conclusion, but the conclusion was St. Louis, Missouri. And so we packed up and moved to St. Louis, Missouri. Crime had been getting out of control in Kansas City, especially in Midtown. I'd left the Plaza area and was living back in the Midtown area again. A lot closer, like the other side of Westport, north of Westport, closer to like the Midtown area.
What street was that off of? I was trying to find it the other
Southwest Traffic Way.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yep, the entrance to our apartment was on Southwest Traffic Way. So when you left the apartment, you had to turn northbound. You couldn't go southbound. Right. I was so sick of the crime in Kansas City that I decided to move to where it was way safer, St. Louis, which has one of the highest crime rates in America, way higher than Kansas City's. But oddly enough, no crimes happened to me there. We moved to, we found this kind of like punk neighborhood. It wasn't like a punk neighborhood, but a lot of punks lived around there. It was a primarily black neighborhood that a lot of punks also lived in. And there's a few like punk bars and stuff. But I honestly never felt like I was in danger there. It felt safer than anywhere in Kansas City. People talk lots of shit on St. Louis and, people are scared to go into neighborhoods where people are black or brown. But I'm telling you, I mean, that's one of the safe, I feel like it was one of the safest neighborhoods I'd ever lived in. Nobody fucked with me there. Nobody.
Yeah. See, that's the experience I had in Kansas City is nobody fucked with me in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Granted, I'm 6'5". Mm-hmm. I dressed all in black and had dreadlocks down to the middle of my back, so...
Yeah,
I mean, I probably intimidated some people, but I had never really was victimized in Kansas City, luckily. There was that one time where there was this car, I don't remember what kind of car it was, but it tried to pick up multiple people from Boston Apartments. I think they tried to pick up Jim, and he got a gun pulled on him. They tried to pick up Eric. I think they tried to pick up Russ. and they tried to pick me up. They were these dudes. I don't know what the fuck. The Citro House kids said they were coming from that gay cowboy bar.
Sidekickers? Sidekicks?
Sidekicks, yeah.
Yeah.
They said that's where they were from. I don't know if that's true. Mm. I don't know how they knew that or whatever. But they would, like, circle up. There's two or three of them. And they would drive by slowly the first time, go around the block, and come by again, and then tell us to get in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And we were always like, fuck you, man. I'm not getting in your fucking car. Yeah. And usually that was the end of it. Jim got a gun pulled on him. I think he may have punched one of them or whatever and gone home. Mm-hmm. They tried that shit with me. They drove around the block thrice. And on the last time, told me to get in the car. I had probably 8 beers in my 12-pack of Pabst. And I just, like, pulled it up like I was going to hit them with it, and they left me alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the closest thing for me, but, like, almost everybody else around me got, like, beat up or jumped or victimized somehow in those apartments. One fun thing we forgot, I don't think we mentioned it last time, was there were a couple different drug dealers, like regular drug dealers in the area. Mm-hmm. And there was one in particular who his sales pitch, as it were, was to go woo.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you would hear him walking around and go, woo, woo. Yeah.
I remember woo. Woo. Woo was awesome.
Woo. Yeah. Yeah. We called him woo guy.
Yeah.
You know, one morning, I think it was like a Sunday, woke me up like pretty early, like 8 o'clock or something. And he was just like, woo, 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 woo. Woo, woo, woo. I was like, damn, Woo Guy's having a good day. I also, I was trying to go to sleep one night, and I heard a kerfuffle out of my window, and I saw some dude walking down the street with a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody came up behind him and punched him in the back of the head and took the guitar from him, and then the guy tried to fight him back, and then he hit him with the guitar and broke the guitar in his head.
There was a drug dealer on 39th Street. Because sometimes we go to that other convenience store, not the Chronica, but the one that was down on 39th. It was like a little ways down. It looked like it used like to be a Quick Trip. Store. What?
It was a proper liquor store. It wasn't just a Quickie Mart.
Right.
It had other stuff because it was it Missouri, but it was predominantly a liquor store. Yeah.
Yeah. At one time, it had been a Quick Trip, I think. It had that same layout. But this drug dealer would always hang out near there, either across the street or in front of that gas station. And he'd walk up and down the street yelling crack as loud as he could. He would just go, crack, crack. Yes. And then he would see you. He'd see you from across the street. Joe and I have talked about this guy before. Joe's also had some very fun experiences with him. He'd see you from across the street and he'd come running across the street and you're like, fuck, shit. And he's like screaming crack, and you'd be like, I don't want any crack. And then he'd come real close to you and he'd whisper, you want some weed? Like, you got to keep that on the down low. Don't let them know you have
nice
pot. But you can scream crack from across the street.
The cops in Kansas City were fucking hella racist too.
Like,
I did walk down the street with a bottle of liquor. Not in a brown paper bag or anything, just a fucking bottle of whiskey or rum or whatever, and just drink out of it.
Yeah.
Cops drive by, nothing would happen. Multiple occasions, if a black man was walking down the street with anything in a brown paper bag,
it was
at least a 30-minute stop.
Yeah.
For the cops to harass him.
You could have a fucking Pepsi. Wouldn't matter.
Yeah. It could be a bag full of candy.
Right.
And the cops would stop him and ask why he had fucking candy and harass him for at least 30 minutes. I mean, I saw it. It was like a daily fucking occurrence there.
I used to walk around. When I lived with Leahy, I'd walk between Westport and the Plaza and even up to Midtown sometimes. And I'd have either a 6-pack or a 12-pack of beer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would not have it in any kind of bag or anything. And I would just pull beers out and drink them and carry around the 12 pack with one open, drinking it, not hiding anything, just just walking down the street, which in Missouri is illegal. In Kansas, too. Kansas and Missouri, it's illegal in both states to do that. Nobody ever said shit to me.
My first experience with a bar allowing me outside with an open container was on St. Patrick's Day at Dave's Stagecoach. So it would have been 2000, St. Patrick's Day 2000, and Westport just became like a block party, I guess. Bars stopped trying to keep people inside. You were there.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember it or not. But it was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, Westport for St. Patrick's Day just becomes just total fucking chaos every year.
Central House kids moved into the Boston apartments. My drinking got really, really, really bad and really out of control. And I would say, like, there was a six-week period where I was blacked out every night. And I was just like, I gotta fucking stop. This is madness. And that was the first time I ever had DTs, which is alcohol withdrawal. And I went like 3 days without booze and couldn't sleep. It was awful. I'd basically been awake for 3 days straight. And some of the Central House kids were in my apartment and they were like, well, have you tried smoking weed to help you sleep? And I was like, no, but that sounds like a pretty good idea. And they had a bong there. So I took like a huge bong rip and it hit me like a ton of bricks. And I was like, y'all need to get out of here. I need to try and go to bed. And I couldn't sleep. I was full on like having a panic attack. It felt like I was on a fucking acid trip. So I took a shower to try and feel normal. And I don't know, dear listeners, if you have tried to take a shower when you're in an altered state like that, but the water does not feel good. The sounds are not pleasant, and it made my experience about a million times worse. And it was like the worst acid trip I've ever had, only it was one bong rip mixed with like alcohol withdrawals. It was fucking terrible. And I went downstairs, and Eric and Jim and, I don't know, a couple other people were playing, like, baseball home run derby on one of their PlayStation. And, like, it was so surreal and so weird. It felt like I was inside the TV while they were playing it. It was awful. And I still didn't sleep. And I think it was the next day when I got off work, Sarah and BJ were in my apartment and they had beer. And I just grabbed one of them from them and slammed it. And I was like, I'm done not drinking. And I immediately felt better. I probably should have gotten help then, but, you know, I waited another 15 years.
Yeah, right.
That was a terrible experience. And it was like probably pretty soon after that I moved out of Boston apartments and in with Leahy because he had the room open up. And, you know, I'd been through, you know, BJ took over your rent and lived there. He only stayed there on the weekends. He was really just helping me out. He was just being a really good friend mostly. And he would stay there on the weekends so we wouldn't have to drive home after partying or whatever. And then he was like, man, I can't do this anymore. It's like, no worries, dude. I understand. And somebody else moved in for a little bit and invited squatters over. And so I came home from work and there was a very large squatter pit bull in my chair. And I opened the door, and it tried to attack me. So I couldn't even go into my own house. So that really sucked. I think I asked them to move out. And then I think Ken moved in with me, and he had this really annoying girlfriend. She kept breaking all my glasses.
Like on purpose?
Then I think the first one was accidentally, and I think after that, because I was like, use plastic cups, fucking dumbass, stop breaking my fucking glasses. Mm-hmm. And then she purposely broke the other one. I think it was a Guinness pint glass, and it was like one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was kind of like the end of me living at the Boston apartments. And so when the opportunity came to move out, I was like, fuck this, I'm getting out of here.
Yeah.
And yeah, Leahy's place was like so much more chill and mm-hmm. quiet. I think I had one like gathering over there that yeah. got kind of wild mm-hmm. with people from Wild Oats came over and hung out. And it might have been when you were working there mm-hmm. with me, because you worked there right before I moved yeah. out.
I think that was the last job I had before I moved to St. Louis.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
And so one day I was on my way home from Wild Oats, and I walked through that park on the plaza. Do you remember what park that is? What it's called?
The one that's like between Broadway and Main or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember. That's where the protests were during the invasion of Iraq. Was in that park. That's where they were organized. I don't remember the name of it. Side.
They were on the south side of that park by the fountain and shit. But this mm-hmm. one, I walked on the north side of the park to get to Wild Oats. Okay. And some fucking hippie stopped. He's like, hey, man, you look like you need this bike more than I do. Here you go. And just left. And I was like, what? And he just dropped off this, like, it was like a $600 mountain bike or something. And I was just like,
you probably stole it.
What the fuck? It's like, oh, I guess I have a bike now.
Sure.
And so I started riding bikes to work. It was good. And yeah. I took it with me to Lawrence. And when I moved back to Wichita from Lawrence, I gave it to my friend Brian because I think he needed a bike. And I was like, some weird fucking hippie gave this to me, so I'll give it to you. If somebody comes looking for it, though,
yeah,
you got it from some dirty hippie, not from me.
Right. Pay it forward, right?
Right.
Yeah. Did you say the same line that when you gave it to him that the hippie said to you?
Hey, man, you look like you need a bike.
Was that a was that like a magical hippie, like from a movie?
Maybe. Could have been. Yeah. I mean, he came into my life and mm-hmm. left just as quickly.
Yeah.
Only I had a bike when he left.
That's great. Not bad. He didn't even make you listen to Fish for the bike, so that was nice.
Wouldn't have been worth it.
Yeah.
No thanks, I'll walk.
That must have been why I moved in with my other roommate then, because I think, yeah, I knew you were looking for a place to live, and it wouldn't have made sense for you to live with her because you didn't freaking know her. So I think that was the deal we came to. I was like, okay, well, she needs a roommate, I'll move in with her, and you just move into my old room at Leahy's, and this is how people did it back in the day. You just kind of did like mm-hmm. musical chairs with rooms and different apartments and houses.
Like, yeah. I didn't take much. I left those big, heavy orange and brown couches that I had. Mm-hmm. I left them there. I was like, fuck it, man. I'm not taking this shit. It's too fucking heavy.
Yeah.
I'm going to take my bed. I'll take my dresser and little piddly shit. But most of the furniture I left there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I lived with Leahy until maybe November, and then I moved to Lawrence. And the final straw for that was, you know, we were spending a lot of time in Lawrence all throughout that time because the Flanders kids had all moved into the Flanders house.
Yeah.
So we were spending a lot of time in Lawrence anyway, mm-hmm. hanging out with them, going to shows at their house, going to shows at the Pirate House. You know, making a ton of new friends in Lawrence, hanging out there a lot of the time. So, you know, when my work went to shit, we got at Wild Oats, got a new manager there. And, you know, Wild Oats was a pretty hippy-dippy health food store. Like, they only stocked organic products, shit like that. So we got a new general manager there. And this motherfucker ate McDonald's every day for lunch. And I was like, this dude doesn't give a shit. He's just here for fucking money.
Every day? McDonald's every day?
Every day. He brought McDonald's in for lunch every fucking day.
If he kept eating like that, then he's probably dead.
Yeah, probably. So I'd worked there for about a year. And in a year's time, I had gone from just a grocery worker to manager of the frozen department and manager of the dairy department. So I was ordering and stocking and doing stuff. I didn't have anyone under me. I was just managing those departments because really there was no one else to do it. My numbers, because he was a big numbers guy, he wanted your numbers to go up. Numbers got to go up. My numbers weren't up from the previous year. And I was like, yeah, I wasn't in charge of this the previous year. Look at the month before, look at 3 months before, you know, there's a trend. The numbers are going back up, but you know, it takes time. And he's like, well, sorry, your numbers aren't up from last year. So, I'm actually going to, give you a demotion and cut your pay. And I was like, well, fuck you. I'm not working here anymore. And quit on the spot. And then I was like, Leahy, I gotta fucking move.
Yeah.
So that's when I moved to Lawrence and lived with Justin because we had already been kind of talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I quit my job there and went to Lawrence.
What, you said you moved to Lawrence in like November of 2000, right?
Yeah. October or November.
October. Yeah. I think I moved to St. Louis. 2000. I want to say I moved to St. Louis. I want to say it was September or October of 2000. So it was around the same time.
Yeah, it was about the same time, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know for the life of me, like, why? Because I remember I thought about moving to Lawrence, too. But for some reason,
I had to live in a bigger city. From what I remember, you always wanted to live in a bigger city.
I did. Yeah, I wanted to live in a big city. But I'd wanted, like, I liked Lawrence, and you're right. We were spending so much time out there. I was going out there. I think I was going to Lawrence probably
every weekend, it seemed like.
Three nights out of the week. I was spending almost half of my week in Lawrence, and then the other half of the week in the town I actually lived in, which was Kansas City, Missouri at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh, yeah, that's kind of weird. I spent so much time out there. But, yeah, I had my heart set on moving to Brooklyn. I just desperately – I was like, I want to move to New York. I want to move to Brooklyn specifically. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was like, well, St. Louis is the first step. And then, you know, I don't know if I knew if like my roommate, I didn't know if she was going to go on the whole journey with me, but I was like, it'd be cool to have somebody for part of it. And maybe she'll like, you know, stay in St. Louis and I'll move on eventually, whatever. Yeah. Like, so we moved to St. Louis. We got this super dope place. I think you were there once, right?
Twice.
Okay.
So yeah, we came to visit with BJ and Sarah, and then I came with you to pack your shit up.
Right. But yeah, me and my roommate found this super dope. It was a, like old school, like row houses, the 19th century row houses in South St. Louis.
Almost looked like brownstones.
Yeah.
You know,
it was fucking gorgeous. And our rent was cheap as shit. I think our rent was like $300 a month, and it was a two bedroom. Just absolutely like tall ceilings, walking distance to
didn't you have
fucking
like
everything.
Like a back deck or something?
Yeah.
Too?
We had a back deck. Okay. We didn't have any parking spot, but I mean, my roommate, I don't think she had a car. I think she sold her car. And then I had my Topaz, which was just a piece of shit. So I didn't care if people ran into it. Probably didn't even notice if somebody ran into it.
Didn't it get buried in the snow? Like a snowplow come by and just bury it?
Oh, yeah, 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 that happened, yeah. But yeah, that thing was, I got my bartending job at Bevo Mill Restaurant, which is the giant mill in South St. Louis. Like, I mean, it's like a European-style fairy tale mill with a restaurant in it. Yeah, it was an odd place. It was a German restaurant. Weird place to work. Didn't get a lot of customers. I was a bartender there, and yeah, the owner would just kind of come and drop money in my tip jar every once in a while, and I didn't want to ask. Like, I was like, maybe he's just a rich guy and is cool about it. Like,
yeah,
I don't
sure
know.
That's all it was.
Yeah, like
everything was on the up and up, I'm sure.
I mean, I'm not going to question it. He helped me pay my rent and my bills. Yeah. So, yeah. That was a weird year. I'll admit though, I liked St. Louis, not enough to stay there. I just didn't have the connections to it that that I had to other places, and I moved there with one person, and she ended up leaving. I think if she would have stayed, I might have stayed, but she ended up moving to Chicago after 1 year, and so I was just there in St. Louis by myself. She followed some girl to Chicago who she, I think, eventually broke up with anyway, but whatever, that's beside the point. So I'm just sitting in St. Louis by myself, and that was when you told me Justin was moving out of your place. Yeah. And I had just gone to your birthday in Lawrence, and I missed everybody in Kansas. I missed Lawrence. I missed Kansas City. I missed everybody in that area. And I'm like, what am I doing? Just sitting in St. Louis by myself. And at that point I was like, okay, so I either need to pack my shit in my car and just drive to New York and make my life there and figure it out, or I need to go move in with my friend back in Lawrence and, you know, I can be around my friends again. And I opted for that second one, and I moved in with you on Kentucky. But yeah, St. Louis is a rad town. I'm not going to lie. Like, if circumstances had been different, I might have stayed. St. Louis has a great vibe. It gets a lot of shit from people, from a lot of people who've never spent any time there. But I had a good time there. There's lots of cool places. I got to see lots of cool bands. There's lots of cool bars. Like I said, there's a lot of punk shows and venues that were within walking distance of my house, and also a White Castle that was open 24 hours within walking distance of my house, which was, I mean, White Castle is disgusting, but when you're drunk as shit, there's nothing better than those shitty little burgers, man. Like, that is absolutely true. I hate to say it. White Castle is not paying me.
Don't forget about Emo's and St. Louis style pizza.
Terrible.
What? Shut the fuck up. It's better than pizza lasagna, all right?
Oh, not at all.
What's the weird cheese they put on it?
Provel,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's basically, it's St. Louis style pizza is a cracker with ketchup and Velveeta cheese thrown on top of it. And then they're like, that'll be $30. And you're like, get the fuck out of here. How is it that a city?
I remember there was an Emo's in Kansas City, and we got it a couple times, and it's not so bad.
We were so drunk when we ate it, though. We were so drunk. I think in St. Louis, that was the first time I ate it when I was sober, and I was like, oh fuck, this isn't good.
I guess.
Yeah, I was like, fuck. Go eat it when you're sober, and you'll be like, oh my god, this isn't good. What the fuck was I thinking? Like I said, I used to go eat White Castle burgers when I was hammered because I was like, oh, this is so good. They're not good.
See, I was vegetarian, so I couldn't eat White Castle. I don't know that I've ever had White Castle. So one of the things that was going on this whole time that we haven't really mentioned is shows. Mm-hmm. And there were so many fucking amazing shows. And I don't even know where to start. I don't really even know the timeline. So I wonder if we should just spend an episode on kick-ass shows that we went to and stories around those shows. We talked about the Grimple show. We talked a little bit about the Citizen Fish show.
Yeah.
But there's so much more. I mean, we could probably fill up an episode just on kick-ass shows that we went to, were a part of, or something like that. So maybe that would be something good to do next.
I think we should roll all the Flanders House shows into the Lawrence episode, even though we were still technically in Kansas City during that time. We spent so much fucking time there, though, that we can just roll that into the Lawrence episode.
I mean, there's not going to be one Lawrence episode.
That's true.
That we should, by the time we get to that, we should just do a Flanders House, a Pirate House, and an Annex House episode.
Did you go to the Haunted Kitchen, or was that after your time there?
No, I was gone.
Oh, okay.
I think I went to a couple shows there, but I was right before I left town when that was starting to pop off.
And then when I moved back to Kansas City, the Rainbow House was really up and going.
Right.
That was in Kansas City, Kansas. Well, obviously on Rainbow Boulevard, hence the name.
But I think we went to Isn't that where we played? Where we yes. had our fake Battle of the Bands? Was it the Rainbow yep. House?
That was at the Rainbow House. The Rainbow Dungeon of Rock, I think, was the full title, but people just called it the Rainbow House. And if anybody who lived there wants to correct me on that, go ahead. I don't remember for sure. I think you guys called it the Rainbow Dungeon of Rock, but if you didn't, let me know.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of drugs there.
Yeah.
Sometimes I was there, there was a lot of drugs happening.
I drank there a lot, even when there wasn't shows, because I lived, when I moved back to Kansas City, I lived, I think, 2 blocks from there. So I was over there all the time. I'd show up for movie night, just cookouts, fucking sitting on the porch, just drinking, listening to a boombox. Like I was.
Who
I
spent, all lived there?
Brooke, Mike Tooley, and.
Laszlo?
I don't think he lived. He was there a lot. I don't think he lived. He lived over in Missouri somewhere.
It was a lot of Pirate House kids that moved back to Kansas City, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Daniel. But yeah, that's who lived there when I was hanging out there all the time.
Okay.
And then there was a lot of people who just kind of crashed there a lot. And yeah, like Laszlo and a lot of the Casey Moe kids would they came over all the time, but they didn't officially live there. I don't think they did. If they did, and they're listening, then let me know. We need to start doing a call-in line or something.
Yeah. So, we have more corrections from Lil Johnny. He is the official gap filler for a Prairie Punk House companion. He messages us after every episode to correct one of our many failed memories, filling our gaps.
Mm-hmm.
So what did he have to say this week? So he's saying that it wasn't Joe that slapped the cop. That it was somebody from another band.
Mm-hmm. Antagony? Mm-hmm.
I'm sure I was there. I don't remember.
Probably.
And then he name dropped the Ted Nugent song, Wang Dang, Sweet Poontang.
Gross.
That is apparently the name of a Ted Nugent song.
Yeah, about an underage girl.
We ought to have.
I know Joe has a cop story. Yeah, maybe that was. The slapping one was. Yeah, the singer of Antagony. I don't remember what Joe has a cop story. I just don't remember what it is now.
So the one I remember is from the Night Train Party, and we can talk about that when we get to the Pirate House episode.
Oh, nice.
I don't want to spoil anything. Go out of order, but we had a Night Train Party where we listened to Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction on repeat and drank Night Train and other cheap wine all night. And if you've ever imbibed those fine wines, I'm sure you can guess the kind of antics that occurred.
Mm-hmm. Were you ever around for the camo parties where we'd sit around and drink camo beer? Remember camo beer? Or it was malt liquor, technically.
I hate you for reminding me of that.
Yeah.
Yes, those were. I remember fucking camo nights. Torin had a CD release party at his house for his band, the band that he was in, Laces Loose. I don't know if you were there or not, but it was like a cakewalk, only with 40s. And I got stuck with a camo 40.
Yeah.
The 40 walk.
I was there. Yeah, I remember now.
I thought you probably were.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you got something better than me. Anything is really better than camo.
Old English 800?
I would rather have that, but my preferred 40-ounce bottles of malt liquor was always St. Ides.
Yeah, St. Ides is all right. I like the Old English. I don't know. That's what I grew up on. That's what we drank back in Wichita, so...
It seemed really cliche to me, I went for St. Ides.
I mean, it wasn't cliche when we started doing it. It became cliched later.
Okay.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I was like 15 the first time I drank Old English, so I didn't know.
If you were going for malt liquor, it was either Old English, or it was Colt 45, or it was Mickey's. And I don't even think that was malt liquor, but it came in 40s and it had those big mouths and people always drank it. And Mickey's is fucking shit, by the way.
It is.
Anything that comes in a green bottle, anything that comes in a green bottle is fucking skunky horse shit.
So the first time I got drunk, I think I was 15, maybe 16, or I was right on that cusp, I guess. And Leahy took me over to some people's house, and he was like, "There's someone there who can buy us alcohol." And I was like, "Oh, cool." I had never drank before, at least not in any real sense. I think my dad gave me a beer or communion something before. Wine. Yeah, there's communion wine. I grew up Catholic, so I had communion wine. And my dad gave me a beer when I was like 12 or 11 or something. But yeah, I never drank in any like real way, like in any way to actually get drunk. And his friend went to the liquor store and came back and gave me two 40s and gave Leahy, I think, probably the same. And then also brought us a six pack of Zima to split. And so I sat down and I drank both of those 40s and three of those Zimas because I didn't know how much it took to get drunk. Anyone who has never drank before, it takes less than that for a 15-year-old to get
a lot less
than that. So the next thing I remember is I'm in somebody's car and they're driving us somewhere and I am just fucking hammered. I don't remember how or when I made it home. And this is daytime. I'm talking like this is like, I think we ditched school that day. So I think this was like noon or like one in the afternoon or something like that. And I don't know. Somehow I made it home. My parents didn't notice that I was just fucking shit hammered.
Oh, they noticed.
No, well, they weren't. They weren't home, so they didn't notice.
Oh, okay.
They didn't get home from work until like 7 p.m. every night. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
You were probably passed out by the time they
got home. Yeah, I mean, I'm Gen X, and I have my parents are too old to be boomers. They're the generation before boomers.
Silent generation.
So they're those parents who are just like, you'll figure out how to get to and from school and how to do what you need to do, and we'll just be home when we're fucking home. Like, that's just...
Yeah.
That's that their generation was just like that. So,
yeah. So I was adopted by my step grandmother. Mm-hmm. So she was 41 when I was born. She was born in 36. So yeah, damn. By the time I was a teenager, she was definitely of the same generation, and you know, you'll figure it out. Like, not to say that, you know, I didn't have a good childhood from her or whatever. But yeah, there was just a completely different mindset.
Right.
She was not hovering over me all the time.
Right. And I know people get this image in their mind when I tell them, like, oh, my parents weren't around. Now, I grew up middle class. You know, I never went home. We always had food. I always had clothes. Mm-hmm. We lived in a suburban-y neighborhood. Like, you know, they provided the best. They provided everything that I could physically need, but they weren't big on the emotional type of support. That wasn't their forte. That entire generation, I would wager.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and they were raised even. I mean, they both grew up dirt poor.
Well, their parents. Yeah, their parents were depression parents.
Oh yeah, 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 for sure. So I mean, they did better than their parents did. But I really hope I do better than my parents did too. So I want to give a shout out to the people all over the world who have been listening to us. We've gotten downloads from all over the world. I think we've been downloaded on every continent except Antarctica and South America. So South America, I really need you to get on that. I don't know why. South America hates us so much. We've even had downloads. Africa's downloaded us. Asia, East and West Asia, East and West Europe. Canada. We have a Canadian listener now. We know that. So,
thanks for the message, fellow Canadian prairie punk.
Yeah, I'm just throwing this out there. If you're from Winnipeg, do you know Propagandhi?
And I just gotta say, I'm really disappointed in all the scientists in Antarctica watching the ice shelves melt. Mm-hmm. You should really be listening to us while you take your measurements.
Right.
What the fuck are you thinking?
Especially right now, because it is, they're entering, they're in their winter months. So they're wintering over down there right now. And so what else are you going to do but listen to fucking podcasts? Seriously.
Keep warm with Neck, Bone, and Jer Bear.
So all of you scientists down there at McMurdo Station, I expect you to do a little bit better. And South America, come on. You've got some of the biggest countries on the planet. Not even one download. Not even one. Come on. Should we plug anything before we go? Should we?
You know, I don't. I mean, no. I don't know. I was gonna. I am going to start posting some of our friends' music on our Facebook page. So I'll probably post some Derailleur and some SBK and some other shit like that that are our friends' bands.
But yeah, thanks everybody for listening, and thanks for what looks like all the support on our first punk movie review that came out last week. We've had a lot of downloads and people watching it, so that's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thanks for feedback and messages and all that stuff. Interact with us more. We love it.
Yep. Keep listening, and I'm glad that the punk movie review is so popular. I mean, that's the indication that I needed to know. Yeah, we should probably keep doing that too. So
yeah, I think so. And I enjoyed doing it as well.
Yeah, I did too. It's easier to have a little more structure for stuff like that than it is when we're just trying to remember shit.
It's so hard to remember stuff. I like racking my brain all day. You know, I made some bullet points to try and remember stuff and to keep us from veering too far off topic. But like, I don't remember that time period because I was so very drunk.
This is for both of us, I think, the biggest memory gap era is that era just before you moved to Lawrence and I moved to St. Louis. And so next time we'll come in with, you know, me moving back to Lawrence and moving into your house after Justin moved out. And I start to have a little more memory again from that point on. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And thank you for all the people who helped us fill gaps. And we hope we filled some gaps for you, too. And, keep listening. Listen next time, too.